Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. So I put it out there for all of you to ask me questions, and I said I would answer them. And I thank you for doing just that. And I have to say that I received so many questions about exercise that I figured I would, you know, it's just best to just tackle that topic head on. Now, I'm not a physical trainer, nor do I have any advanced degree in exercise physiology. However, I can speak to what exercise does look like when it's associated with having an eating disorder and when it's not. And believe me, there's a difference. I don't know about you, but I can't really recall how I learned about the purpose of exercise. I recall hearing things like exercise is good for you, or exercise more and eat less. And I know that I equated exercise with losing weight. And I played sports for many, many years. And even though I played sports year-round, for some reason, I never thought of that as exercise. I saw that as fun and part of my social life. I only equated going to the gym or going out for long runs as exercise. Those things I saw as working out or losing weight, things to burn off calories I had consumed, and as a way to, quote unquote, earn my food. If I did not do those things, I felt an immense amount of guilt and I was really in a bad mood. And thinking back, I truly believe I took the motto on as eat less and exercise more a little too far. Because I did just that. Over time, I ate a lot less and exercised a lot more. To me, it was almost torture at times to engage in that behavior. I had to fit exercise in. I had to struggle through it. I had to do it or else I would not allow myself to eat. Or I'd be convinced I would immediately gain weight. The longer and harder I worked out, the better. And only certain exercise counted. Walking certainly didn't count. I didn't sweat, so how could that possibly count? The same with yoga. Those two I considered only quote-unquote extras that I considered bonuses on top of whatever quote-unquote real exercise I had to fit in for the day. And I had a certain amount of time I had to fit it into, or else it didn't count. I remember 60 minutes of cardio. Any less and it wasn't a quote-unquote real workout. I recall times when I would be so upset if I only had 30 minutes or half an hour to work out. Sure, I would still go, but I really wouldn't feel like it counted. So I would have to make up for it the next day with an even harder and longer workout. That, or I'd surely make sure I didn't eat as much that day. I'd even eat less. I would go to the scale and I'd weigh myself, convinced I'd gain weight. And of course, you know, my clothes were tighter. I just knew I had screwed up and I'd immediately gain weight. And it was on those days that things were the worst. I would be so upset and my mind was consumed with how awful I looked. I would be so anxious to try on anything in my closet. I was convinced that nothing would fit. Nothing. You know, thinking back, I'm sure I looked exactly the same. I'm sure I didn't gain a pound. But in those horrible times of my eating disorder, my every thought and feeling about my appearance, my weight, and my clothes hinged on my exercise for the day. It was better for me to fit in the gym or that run some way or somehow just so that I could feel calm and have that peace of mind knowing that, you know, all was right in the world, that I could feel okay to eat what I considered my quote-unquote safe foods and tell myself that, hey, at least for that day, my clothes would fit and I had done what I needed to do to make sure I was not going to gain any weight. As long as I could control all of this, then life was okay. It was when things got in the way that I felt out of control, that everything felt chaotic. And I had to do something to try to regain some control. That is why I would be so desperate to eat less or run to the scale to see if it was really all that bad or just plain not go out and see anyone that day because I had to get back on track. It was all control, control, control. Regardless of how sick I felt or if I had an injury or if I was lacking sleep, I could just not go without having any major consequences to my thoughts, feelings, and overall daily life. I never, ever recall hearing that exercise had any other purpose. What? Another purpose? It was not until I went into recovery that I learned exercise was not anything about what I thought it was. I thought that the second I ingested food, it immediately went onto my body as extra weight that I needed to somehow burn off. I never thought about food as necessary to stay alive, or as fuel, or nutrition. To me, it was either good or bad. Good food meant that it was less likely to make me gain weight. Bad food was definitely going to make me gain weight, and it was, you know, bad. To me, exercise just helped get rid of the bad food I ate, or really any food I ate. It was a good long while for me to realize that exercise and food were not really connected. In recovery, it's where I started to learn that exercise was about making my body stronger and promoting physical health and well-being. It was about helping me to be more flexible and helping me to function better in my daily life. I started to understand that exercise helped my body to be able to do things that were necessary in my life, things like carry those heavy groceries up the stairs, walk around all day at the amusement park without getting tired, or walk up several flights of stairs without getting winded when the elevators broke, or, you know, lift up and carry my carry-on luggage into the storage on the airplane. All of those things that I now call functional fitness. And exercise also helped my overall mood, but not in the way it did before. Before, I did it to help me feel less worried about gaining weight. It helped me to feel less anxious about eating. It helped give me a false sense of control. But it also made me more anxious overall. I had to fit it in. Exercise after recovery became a way to decrease my stress. It became a way to have some time to think to myself, really to clear my head, think through problems. Now, I know for some people, they exercise for different goals than just this. You know, if you're somebody listening to this, if you have cardiovascular fitness goals, like you're training specifically for a 10K race, or you want to complete a marathon, then that takes a certain level of training for sure. But that's an entirely different goal for exercise here. But both exercising for functional fitness and to train to achieve a certain level of athletic ability are very, very different from exercising for eating disorder reasons, which are to lose weight, burn off calories, earn your food, not feel guilty for not doing so, and to be quote unquote thin, versus doing something to benefit your physical and emotional well-being. Whereas the first two add to your life and allow you to engage in your life more, the other only takes away from your life and actually keeps you from engaging in your life. You have less energy and spend your time working out or feeling guilty if you don't, instead of spending your time living your life. Okay, I shared some of my own personal history and experience with exercise and my eating disorder. But maybe you're out there listening, wondering for yourself about the role exercise plays in your life. So now I'm going to switch to putting on my clinical hat here. When I have someone in my office, I don't compare their eating disorder or exercise behaviors to how mine were. Because each and every person is unique and has their own story and situation. There's some things I consider knowing which diagnosis someone has. You know, so exercise for people who have anorexia nervosa, for example, is commonly, they describe exercise as being driven or compulsive. They just have to do it. And with anorexia nervosa, physical signs of fatigue are ignored as they continue to train despite being physically ill or say they're really tired or have no energy. And while most people think of self-induced vomiting as the only compensatory behavior that people who have bulimia nervosa engage in, it's not. About 20% of people who have bulimia nervosa engage in excessive exercise. It's a common compensatory behavior. So I assess if exercise is problematic, not so much based on the quantity or amount of activity that they're doing, but more so on what their motivations and attitudes are behind it. So feeling exercise as a compulsion, exercising primarily to influence their shape and weight, and feelings of guilt after missing an exercise session. So I'll give you an example. I may have a competitive college athlete in my office who engages in more total time exercising than a person with an eating disorder. But after assessing both people for their attitudes about their exercise, I may only define the eating disorder person's exercise as excessive, while the college athlete might not have problematic behaviors. They might have problematic attitudes. So what are these attitudes? So I'm going to read off some basic statements that aren't meant to give you a definitive answer about if you're exercising excessively, but I'm going to read them off one by one. And if you agree with most of them, I suggest you strongly consider seeking help to explore your relationship with exercise further. So here we go. My exercise interferes with important activities such as work or socializing. I exceed 3 hours of exercise per day. I experience stress or guilt when I'm unable to exercise. I exercise at inappropriate times and places and cannot stop the behavior. I continue to exercise despite injury, illness, or medical complications. So you may be wondering, hey, why is it so important to think about seeking help? Because exercise in patients with eating disorders and disorder eating can be dangerous. Patients, you know, or if you're listening out there, you may exercise and not feel properly. So you put yourself at risk for a lot of serious medical complications, electrolyte imbalances, heart problems, muscle wasting, strokes, heart attacks, sudden death. And if you're someone who has anorexia nervosa, you often have weak bones, and so you're more likely to experience fractures. And the physical strain associated with overexercising exacerbates this risk. So the presence of excessive exercise among patients with anorexia nervosa is associated with longer inpatient treatment duration and a shorter time to relapse. Excessive exercise with people with disorder eating is also associated with a greater risk of suicidality. So while we spent time talking about excessive exercise and how it can be dysfunctional and can hurt you, I think it's worth spending some time also discussing when exercise can be functional and beneficial. So what does that look like? It can really have a positive impact on your life. Exercise improves your mood. As I found for myself, it's true. If you need an emotional lift or want to blow off some steam after a stressful day, it's true. A gym session or a brisk walk really can help. And physical activity stimulates various brain chemicals that, you know, really leave you feeling happier and more relaxed and less anxious. You may also feel better about your physical abilities and yourself when you exercise regularly, which can boost your confidence and improve your self-esteem. Exercise also boosts your energy. And related to what I discussed when I spoke about functional fitness, if you're winded by grocery shopping or doing household chores, regular physical activity can improve your muscle strength and boost your endurance. Exercise delivers oxygen and nutrients to your tissues and helps your cardiovascular system work much more efficiently. So when your heart and lung health improve, you have more energy to just tackle all those daily chores and just function better. Having problems sleeping? Well, exercise promotes better sleep too. So regular physical activity can help you fall asleep faster and get better sleep and deepen your sleep. So just hold on here. One thing I do want to mention though, if you exercise within 3 hours of bedtime, you actually might be too energized to go to sleep. So just be careful with that. And something else, exercise can improve your sex life. So regular physical activity has been found to enhance arousal for women. And for men who exercise regularly, they're less likely to have problems with erectile dysfunction than, you know, they're less likely to have problems than men who don't exercise. And some people may feel too tired or too out of shape to enjoy physical intimacy without regular physical activity. So adding it to your life can improve your energy level and increase your confidence, which may help improve your sex life too. And exercise can take on lots of forms and improve your social life. So exercise and physical activity don't have to be just some kind of regimented routine you suffer through at the gym. You know, it can be fun and enjoyable. You know, we're meant to move. After all, you know, we're physical beings. So do what feels good in your body, not something that feels like torture or you're, you know, counting down each minute until you're done. You know, physical activity can help you connect with family or friends in a fun social setting. So, you know what? Get creative. Take a dance class with your partner, join a bowling league with your friends, take your kids out to the park to play a game of tag, or, you know, call your friend and take a walk and catch up at the end of the week. Because, you know what? The bottom line is there is really here that, yes, exercise can be excessive, it can hurt, or it can help you. So if you think you may have crossed the line, please consider reaching out for help. All right, everyone. Again, I thank you for listening. I thank you for being here. I truly do appreciate your questions. And as you can tell, I do read them and I do answer them. So please go to my website or my Instagram or Facebook and message me with any questions you have. I love hearing from you. After all, this, you know what, this podcast is for you. My website again is behindthebitepodcast.com. You can go there. My information is there to email me. And also there's a free 9-week email course where you can start your journey to, you know, end your struggles with food and body image issues. You know, as always, I hope you enjoyed this show. And if you did, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. So anyway, thank you again for being here. Until next time, to your health, everyone.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.